The Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, Episode 6. In Cleveland, Ohio, it's illegal to catch mice without a hunting license. I'll show you Paris in the morning. I'll show you London afternoon. If you feel your Dublin heart is burning, yeah, well, you don't have to worry, cause we're going there soon. And you don't have to worry. Hello, travel nerds, and welcome to the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, the show that will inspire you to travel and then show you how to do it on any budget. I'm Trav, the creative Extra Pack of Peanuts, and with me today is a man who started one of the most well-known travel websites in the world and someone who has just reached a high level of notoriety because he has his very own Wikipedia page, Gary Arndt from everything-everywhere.com. Gary, thanks for joining the show and welcome.
Thanks for having me.
For those of you who don't know, Gary is a full-time traveler who has a fantastic website. He's an amazing photographer, and he is known for visiting tons and tons of places, but that wasn't always the case. Gary, at one point, you were a quote-unquote normal person like many of us out there, right?
Yeah. Growing up, my family never traveled internationally. Did a couple of vacations, but I never even saw saltwater until I was 21.
So could you please tell us then, I guess, a little bit about your backstory? What were you doing before you were traveling full time? And what was the tipping point for you that made you begin traveling full time?
I had an internet company that I started in my early 20s back just when the internet was starting to become a thing. And we made custom database apps at a time when people weren't really doing it. It's pretty common now. Basically, we were making WordPress before there was WordPress.
Oh, neat.
And I sold that business in 1998. Started a couple other companies, didn't really know what to do, went back to school, and realized that what I enjoyed doing was traveling. And there was nothing particularly stopping me from traveling. I wasn't married, didn't have kids, had some money put away. So I decided to. I sold my home and set out for what I thought would be 1 or 2 years traveling around the world. And it's ended up becoming a lot more than that.
Yeah, so at this point, when did you start the traveling full time and how long has it been?
I handed over the keys to my house on March 13th, 2007. And that's the day I sort of celebrate as my travel anniversary.
Wow. So we're at almost 6.5 years at this point then.
Yep.
One of the things that I thought was really interesting that you have on your website as listed as one of the largest collections of National Geographics in the world. But then, like you said, you didn't do much traveling up until you kind of started this world tour in 2007. You did a little bit before that. Were you collecting these when you were young, or did this start much later in life?
Well, my dad had a subscription to National Geographic, and I think that's what got me interested in wanting to see the world. And after I sold my business, I just kind of started buying National Geographics. In fact, I own an original copy of issue 1, number 1 from 1888.
Wow.
All of which is sitting in my mother's basement right now. Boxes of National Geographic and traveling around the world do not go well together.
Right, right. So you have them collecting dust there in the basement, but they are then, I guess, what prompted you to have this travel bug, even if you didn't realize it until later in life.
Yeah, I've always knew that I wanted to travel, but it was just a matter of having the time and the means to do it.
Yeah. At this point then, what is your travel like? So it's been almost six and a half years. Is it fast travel? Do you jump around to a lot of places? Is it slow travel? Do you do it on your own? Are you ever with groups? And how has it changed then over the last 6.5 years?
The answer to all the above is yes.
So you do it all?
Well, when I started, it was pretty much I went from A to B to C, and it was all just kind of a big linear loop around the world. And as the blog became more popular, and as the industry has kind of woken up to working with travel bloggers, the opportunities for me to travel have become greater. I have a sponsor, G Adventures. In fact, I'm recording this in their offices in Toronto. They do group tours, adventure tours around the world. In fact, they're the biggest adventure tour operator. And so I travel with them several times a year. This year already, I did a Central America trip with them. And I ran a photography tour through Italy. So I do a little bit of everything. And in fact, I've been going very fast this year. I've visited over 60 UNESCO World Heritage sites in 2013 already. Wow. And we're recording this near the end of May.
Right.
So what I'm hoping to do is to slow down a little bit for the remainder of the year and kind of take it easy.
Yeah, I actually wanted to point out you just did an interesting post on your website that I thought was very, very interesting. And you discussed something you call the Gary Paradox. If you could tell everyone what the Gary Paradox is and kind of what your new plan for combating the travel exhaustion that you've been experiencing lately.
The problem with travel blogging as opposed to other forms of blogging is that it involves you have to go out and do stuff. You have to go and experience things and travel. And if you're doing that, you're not sitting at a computer. And if right. you're sitting at a computer, you are not going out exploring the world. And so you paradoxically have to, you know, to have a blog, you have to sit down at a computer, and then you also have to do these things. Almost every other form of blogging does not require going out and seeing the world. You can just sit down and write about stuff and provide your thoughts and things like that. So that's, you know, that's the difficult thing that I think every travel blogger I've ever met has to face is how you balance the two.
Right. Yeah. Like you said, if you're writing about it, you're not doing it. And if you're doing it, you're not writing about it unless you find a way to take your laptop on the top of Mount Everest or something crazy like that. So you've mentioned that you've been going a lot in 2013. Is there any specific reason why you've been jumping around so much, or has it just been the opportunities that presented themselves?
You know, I love travel. I still love it even after all this time. And I love visiting historical and cultural places. And we did a project with the German tourism this year where I visited – I had previously – they have 38 World Heritage sites in Germany. I had previously visited 10, and they wanted to do something with me. So I suggested a road trip where I visit the remaining 28 sites.
Oh, very cool.
So I did 2 weeks where I just drove all over Germany. I visited every state in Germany. And then I was in Croatia. I did a road trip through Croatia. And so it's just been a lot of driving and a lot of going from town to town and being able to explore these sites.
Now, when you did the German road trip, was that with other people? Was it with a group? Was it by yourself?
It was just with me.
Okay. And I assume that you have stuff on your website about it, or you'd be putting stuff up about it?
Well, this goes back to the paradox. I haven't time to write about it. I've done a brief write-up for each of the sites I visited, right. But I still have thousands of images that I have to process and things I have to write about.
Yeah, and with that, I mean, I'm sure many people hear this stories of, oh, you went to 28 sites in 2 weeks, and they hear that you're a full-time traveler, and they think that you're kind of perpetually on vacation. And while it obviously works for you and you enjoy it, seeing as you've been doing it for so long, what are some of the drawbacks to this lifestyle or obstacles that you have to constantly overcome that people probably don't realize when they just hear the fun, cool stuff that you're doing?
You know, vacation is sitting on the beach and relaxing. What I've been doing is actually the last couple of months has been really tiring. Being in a different hotel room every night, you know, sometimes almost for a month straight is very difficult. Not to mention finding time to do laundry and just, you know, basic things that people do. Your diet suffers because you're always eating in restaurants or eating, you know, junk food. And then you have to manage this business that you're running online while you're doing all that stuff. So the fact that you're away from home doesn't instantly equal vacation.
Right. And I assume then, how does it affect certain relationships you have, like with friends, family back home, with people you meet on the road? How do you balance that with traveling so quickly sometimes?
It's not a matter of, as far as everyone else is concerned, they have no idea that I'm moving. They want to contact me, they would do so on Facebook or email or something like that. As long as I have an internet connection, it's all the same to them.
Okay.
So I could be sitting in one spot in Thailand for 3 months or running around Europe, they don't really know.
Right, right. It's where in the world is Gary? It doesn't matter to them. They know that they can get a hold of you on Skype or anything if they need be.
Right.
So you've come up with a plan now, though, to combat this running around that you've done in 2013. And so what is your new plan that you're going to try to implement for the rest of the year?
Well, I'll start it in August because I still have one big trip remaining, although this won't be as stressful. I'm spending 3 months working my way through the Caribbean, visiting all the countries and territories of the Lesser Antilles.
Okay.
But that's like 3 to 4 days on each island, and that's not so bad. It's a slower pace than what I've been doing, and it's the Caribbean, so.
Right, right. That is almost a vacation there, huh?
Yeah, that kind of is. So the plan is, I had originally thought that if I spend one day working for one day traveling, that would be a good balance. It turns out that's not even enough. So what I'm going to be doing is spending 2 months in some city somewhere. And then I'll spend a 2 week expedition off doing something. So I may live in a place for 6 weeks, rent an apartment on Craigslist or something like that, followed up by, doing some sort of adventure that's very intense for 2 weeks. So that might be going down the Amazon. It might be taking the Trans-Siberian Railroad. It might be another road trip, something like that.
Okay, so you'll do 2 weeks kind of full on, let's do something crazy, and then take a couple months and relax and, you know, still travel within that city and that area, but have more time to sit down and work on the website and stuff like that.
Doing something for 2 weeks intensely, I found, is doable. And if I know that there's a break afterwards where I'll be able to process all this stuff, I can actually probably even do more during those 2 weeks in terms of capturing not just photos, but also video and other things as well.
Yeah, one interesting thing about your website is that you put up a daily photo every day, and that's something that many, many people would have given up on, I'm sure, after, you know, the first 50, 100 days, something like that. But for right now, how many straight days has it been that you've put up a daily photo to your website?
Man, it's got to be around 2,000 almost.
Yeah. I remember you saying a while back it was like 1,500 or something. So
yeah, so in November 22nd, I think, it'll be 6 years of a photo every day.
And with that, obviously, sometimes you are traveling. How are you able – well, all the time you're traveling, but sometimes you're at places that might not have great internet connections. How do you manage to put up a new photo every day?
You can schedule in advance on WordPress, and I also have an assistant who helps me, and she'll sometimes pick a photo and post it for me.
Yeah, and that's really neat. One of the cool things about your story that I think everyone can take away is when you first started traveling, not only hadn't you traveled too much before that, but you also didn't really know anything about photography, correct?
Nothing. Absolutely zero. I bought a camera that was way over my head, and I thought that by buying an expensive camera, it would make great photos, and it turns out that doesn't work.
Yeah, and now you've gotten to the point where a lot of your photography has been so good that it's been featured on, you know, in a lot of different outlets and been up for different awards, right?
Yeah, I've won a Lowell Thomas Award from the Society of American Travel Writers. I just won a Northern Lights Award from the Canadian Tourism Commission. North American Travel Journalism Association Awards. And these are awards that I'm competing head to head with, like the New York Times and National Geographic.
Right. Like people who have been traveling, writing, et cetera, for their entire lives. What was the draw for you to actually, instead of just taking pictures, actually understand photography, get better at it, and become someone that a lot of people in the travel industry look to for advice for photography, even though you've had no actual training in terms of schooling or anything like that?
I don't think your training matters. All that matters is the end result. So if you can take good photos and do it consistently, then people will respect you as a photographer or a writer or anything else. The process was just a very analytical one of saying, being honest with myself, saying these photos stink, these are good. Why does this stink? Why is this good? And then trying to replicate the good things and eliminate the bad things. And over time, it's just, you know, I'm still learning. Still things areas that I can improve. And, you know, hopefully my photos next year will be better than my photos this year.
Yeah, very, very neat. I think that is a really cool lesson that a lot of people can take, is that you don't have to go to school for something. You don't have to have someone teach you, although that can help. But if you want to do something, you just keep trying it. And of course, you know, you've done it for 6.5 years now, so you're obviously going to continue to get better.
photography is not rocket science. There's only a couple basic things, and the rest of it is applying what you've learned and knowing the vast number of exceptions to rules and things like that.
Yeah, and I'm not going to ask you your favorite place, since I know your feelings about that. And if you guys want to know Gary's feelings about that, he has a post on his website about why the question of what is your favorite place is a bit hard to answer and maybe not even worth answering. But I do want to ask you something a little different then. What are a few of the places that you've gone to that you never imagined you would get to when you started this whole crazy traveling the world type thing?
I've been to a lot of, you know, I should start by saying where I have not been. In 6.5 years traveling, I've been to over 125 countries and territories. I have never been to China.
Okay.
I haven't been to Russia.
Two big spots on the world.
India, Brazil. So there are these big, obvious, gaping holes in my travel resume. But I really love the small places. So I've been to most of the tiny islands in the Pacific. This trip coming up through the Caribbean, I'll get to go to places like Dominica and Grenada that few people visit. I've visited all the micro states of Europe. I've always really loved visiting those places. And those are places I only really knew from an atlas or, you know, reading the encyclopedia when I was little. And being able to see them firsthand is something I really enjoyed.
When you first started, I know you said you thought it would be a year or 2 years, and then I guess you'd come back to your regular life or something like that. Was there a plan in place when you started of I'm going to go here, here, and here, or did you just pick a first place and go, and from there it's kind of just worked its way out?
No, I just had a general idea that I wanted to go west, so I started in the Pacific. Went to Hawaii, from there French Polynesia, Easter Island, and then just sort of made it up as I went along. Took me about 6 months to cross the Pacific.
Oh, okay. So pretty neat. So you just hopped around from island to island there at first.
Yeah.
Well, on the flip side of that, the place you mentioned, some of the places you haven't been to yet. Are there places that you haven't been that you're itching to go to then? Is China a place you really want to go to, or is it somewhere you're going to go to cross off the list? I mean, is there any places that you're like, I can't wait to get here?
Oh, there's loads of them. One thing, as the more I travel, the more I realize that with some exceptions, I don't think of a lot of countries as a country anymore. For example, Spain, I think of as several different regions. And visiting Catalonia is very different than visiting Andalusia, for example.
Right.
The United States is really big. You know, you can't just go to New York and say, oh, well, I've seen the United States. New York is New York. It's its own thing, which is very different than going from Colorado, which is very different than Florida, which is very different than Arizona. I would love to go to China, and Russia. It's just been I've had other opportunities and other things, and I just haven't gotten there yet. And they're also enormously large countries, which means that to really visit it properly will take quite a bit of time.
Do you have any plans right now to visit any of those places? You said you've got some stuff in the pipeline. Is there any plans to go there, or is it just something you're going to do in the near future at some point?
It's I'm thinking 2014, I might take, say, the Trans-Mongolian Railroad from St. Petersburg to Beijing.
Okay. Yeah. That's something I've always wanted to do as well and haven't.
But as far as like stuff already kind of in the pipeline for this year, no. I'll do the Caribbean thing. Then I may end up going to Ireland for TBEX Europe, and then I may go to Namibia for another conference. Then I'll stay in South Africa, I think, for a while. And then I don't know.
Yeah. Well, sometimes it's best not to know, because I'm sure that stuff pops up all the time that you weren't planning that then ends up being something better than even you could imagine.
Yeah. I mean, the best things are always the things you don't plan for.
Right. Another question I'm sure you get asked all the time by everyone is kind of this idea of when will this whole travel thing be over? When will it stop? And, you know, I get asked that, and I don't travel as much as you, but I'm sure most people who do get asked that all the time. And that's from people who usually see travel as like a finite thing. And you mentioned at this point you've been 125 countries and territories, I think all 50 states, all across Australia, Canada, and a bunch of UNESCO heritage sites. But do you find your desire to continue to travel gets greater or less the more places that you do get to see?
it's probably greater. I mean, it's not something, you know, no one goes to a painter and say, okay, when are you done painting? Right?
Yeah, very true.
Are you done now?
Very true.
That's just, it's not how it works. And I'm not saying travel is an art form, but I am saying it's kind of a lifestyle. It's just something I do. Unless I'm physically incapacitated somehow, I don't intend to stop traveling.
Yeah, I've noticed that about myself. The more places I see, the more I realize, like you've been pointing out, how everything is different. You can say, hey, I'm going to go to America. But yeah, going to Colorado is way different than Alabama, than New York, than, you know, California. And I think that's what a lot of people who don't travel as much don't realize, is they think they're going to go to a place and see it and then it's over. And, you know, why would I go back to this place? I've already been there. But there's a lot of intricacies, I think, that even if you're at a place for a while, you can't get a hold of unless you really kind of immerse yourself in that culture.
Oh, and there are places where I visited multiple times. And I hear people say, for example, I was just in Jordan last month, and I visited Wadi Rum again, and I visited Petra again. And I hear people say, well, I've done that. It's like, well, no, especially when talking about a country. It's like, well, I've done Ireland, or I've done Italy. No, no, you haven't. People who live there haven't done it. There's always more to see.
Yeah, I feel that way about Angkor Wat in Cambodia. I've been once, and if someone today said, would you rather go there, or, you know, there's plenty of other places I'd rather go back to Angkor Wat over plenty of other places, because it was just amazing. And, you know, I spent a day there. Really, you could spend a week there, 2 weeks there, and you couldn't even get all of it in. And, you know, there's plenty of places like Thailand. I've been a bunch of times, and people always say, well, why are you going back there as opposed to going somewhere else? But, you know, northern Thailand's way different than the beaches in Thailand and stuff like that. So has there ever been a specific time? We talked about this desire to travel and it getting larger. Has there been a specific time, though, where your desire to travel was just kind of completely dead and you thought, you know, I want to go home, I want to lead a regular life? And if that did happen, why did you not end up doing that?
Well, I've never had a regular life. I mean, I've never had a real job ever. From the moment, you know, I graduated college, I was either working for myself or, you know, doing something, but I never had a desk job ever. So I've never had a desire to do that. So I'm certainly, there's nothing to return to. And once you've been doing this for a while, in the back of your head, whenever you go on a trip, is always the notion that you're going to go home. Whether the trip is good or bad, that's always there. And it took about, I don't know, 3 or 4 months of traveling before I got that out of my system, this notion that I'm not going home.
Right.
And once you do that, this sounds really deep, but it's not meant to be. It's just the truth. You come to accept that wherever you are, that's kind of where you are. And so there isn't a desire to go back home, because you're home everywhere. I get tired. There are times where I want to rest and just not move around so much, but it's not a feeling of wanting to go home.
Yeah. And I assume then you do return to where you grew up every once in a while, which I believe, am I right in saying it's Wisconsin?
Yeah. So I get there about twice a year, maybe. I was there in January around New Year's, and I'll be going back next week. So I'll be there for about a week.
Oh, very neat. Yeah. I think that your idea, I think, is a poignant one about if you do travel, if you do are someone who's going to travel for an extended period of time, I think that once you break that threshold of saying, like, yeah, I'm going to go home, and you just think of where you are and then where you're going next, and it not being, you know, where you grew up or your home, it is a very liberating kind of feeling, because I think it at least has helped me settle down then when I'm traveling. Because sometimes I get anxious if I feel like, okay, I only have 15 days to do Thailand, like we've talked about, and then I'm going home. I have to squeeze it all in. Whereas something like what you're doing, it kind of settles me down. I don't know if you get the same feeling or not.
Yeah, most people, it's something that they'll never experience, because they're never at a point in their life without a home. And if they are, it's probably not something that they chose.
Right.
So it's not something that most people can really understand or realize. So they may have a very difficult time, understanding what you mean by it.
Yeah. And kind of building on that, then obviously a lot of people who are listening to this aren't going to be people who are traveling full time, and they may not ever be become a person who's going to travel full time. You know, they're going to be a regular 9-to-5 job. They're happy with it. They have a family. But a lot of those people that I talk to genuinely want to make travel a bigger part of their life. So what type of advice could you give to those people to make small changes in their lives, but to be able to get more authentic travel experiences from when they actually do go on a vacation?
I meet people all the time. They don't travel full time like me, but they may go on, you know, 2-to-4 trips a year. They use their vacation time wisely. They make it a priority to spend money on traveling rather than on other things. And if you look at all the dumb things that most people spend money on, you could probably cut out a lot of stuff and have plenty of money to travel. And I think you certainly don't have to travel full time in order to have a life that's rich in travel. And you extend that out several decades, and you know, you can visit a lot of the earth in most human lifetimes if you just make traveling a priority in your life. It's really just a decision. That's all it is.
Yeah, and so you would recommend that if these, you know, these people come to you and they say, I can only travel 3 weeks a year, that then they plan for that and say, we're going to save money so that when we do travel, we can afford to, you know, do the things we want when we're traveling as opposed to spending money at home.
Yeah, and a lot of people, you know, I think when you make travel a priority, you're not as hung up on staying in luxury hotels and things like that. Whereas if you view traveling as a vacation, I know some people, they just, you know, they must stay at 5-star right. hotels. Even they do, though they do not live in a 5-star home,
right.
they feel that, you know, they must go to spas. They must be, you know, that's what travel means. And I think once you, again, divorce yourself from that notion and you don't realize you don't have to stay in luxury spots, and that the less you spend on a hotel and the less you spend eating means you can do more things. Most people, you know, will probably enjoy that.
Yeah, I think there's a very big divide between what we've kind of talked about as a vacation and then actual traveling. And I do agree with you 100%. Most of my friends and people I talk to, when they talk about a vacation, they say, I'm going to stay at, you know, a $300 a night resort, and I'm going to buy, you know, the best meals I can. And that's fine. But I do think that if you really want to travel and get an authentic experience, you save money on some of that stuff so that it allows you to do more things down the road, more trips or travel longer or something like that.
Yeah.
In that vein, you've done a lot of traveling, and most of it, especially in the beginning, was done completely on your dime. I know that now you do a lot of sponsored trips and things like that. But what are a few tips and tricks that you've learned that helped you when you first started save money when you were traveling, because you didn't have a plan to come home? So you were probably trying to save money at every turn because it could then make you travel longer.
It's not that hard. Basically, stay in lower cost places. So like hostels, guest houses, 2-star, 3-star hotels, things like that. The more you fly, the more frequently you fly, the more money you're going to spend. So if you can travel over land, that'll reduce the amount of, so you, going sequentially from place to place is a lot easier than jumping all around the world, right. which is strangely enough what I do now, but I guess, you know, I'm not paying for a lot of the flight, so I can actually get away with it. The longer you stay in a place, the less money you will spend. You can get an apartment in Bangkok, for example, for a month for maybe $200 to $400. Right. Whereas if you were spending the same amount going to hotels, you could burn that up real quick.
Yeah, you could burn that in a day or two, really.
Yeah. And likewise, if you get an apartment, you can cook your own food and buy groceries, which will also save money.
When was the last time then that you did kind of travel slow and take a month or 2 months to be in one, at least one area?
Oh, last October, I was in Bangkok for a month.
Okay, and you did kind of what you're saying. You rented an apartment and cooked and stuff like that.
No, I was actually at a hotel there. But the reason I was at the hotel is because the guy who owns it has one of the better internet connections for any place in Bangkok. So,
yeah, kind
of. He gave me a good rate. He knows me. I've stayed there many times.
Yeah, kind of a necessity for someone who's working on the internet, I guess.
Yeah.
For, you know, you've now built a very, very successful website. I think that you pull in over 100,000 readers a month. So for aspiring travel bloggers or bloggers in general out there listening to this, what are some of the best pieces of advice you could give them, things you wish you knew when you started, but you kind of had to learn the hard way?
Don't try to make money right away. I think that's a huge mistake people make. They start their blog and then step two is, how do I make money? And the answer is, you don't make money. You have to build your audience. And if you don't have an audience, you have nothing to make money on. And I see so many people, they end up doing things that hurt them in the long run because they're so fixated on making money on their website, and they've put themselves in a position where they have to make money on their website, and they end up doing things out of desperation. And then in the long term, I think you're kind of screwed. Yeah. If you can't become a successful amateur blogger, you'll never be able to do it professionally.
Yeah, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you said it took you 4 or 5 years to even make a dime off of your website?
Well, I made a little bit of money here and there. You know, I'd put some AdSense. I tried experimenting with AdSense and things like that. But over that 5 years, if it amounted to more than maybe $1,000 or $2,000 for that entire time, I'd be amazed. It was not a serious attempt at trying to make money.
Okay.
It wasn't my focus. My focus was and still is on growing my audience. If you have an audience, and I don't mean traffic by that, that's not page views, but people who know who you are and care about what you have to say. If you have a following online that cares about you, then every other problem will solve itself. Opportunities will come to you because people will want access to that audience. If you don't have an audience, if all you have is SEO traffic and selling links, then you know you're kind of at the bottom of the food chain.
Yeah, and I think it comes back to that whole, you know, who's going to win the race, the tortoise or the hare? It obviously took you many, many years to build the audience. You've been very successful now, but you did it in an organic way that now you know those people are there for life, basically. They're almost like they're friends of yours. They're a community.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, I had a meetup last night here in Toronto, and I had people show up who I've never met before, who have never commented on my website, never sent me an email. I had no idea who these people were, and they can recite all these things I've done and all the posts I've written. And there's this enormous, very quiet people who, you know, read my site, but they're not necessarily engaged. And, you know, that's one of the other things I found is that travel is different than other niches. And people try to get blogging advice from these marketers. And all they know is about marketing to marketers.
Right.
And it's a very different thing because they're dealing with a very engaged audience who wants to make money. And it's very different than travel where it's mostly passive. People are very enthused about bands they follow, about sport teams they follow. Most travel, unless you happen to be actively going on a trip, which you're mostly doing research, it's going to be very passive. When I post a photo from Paris, it gets lots of engagement. And the reason I found is because people have been to Paris. So they have something to say if they've been there before. If I post something from the Solomon Islands, most people have never been there, let alone heard of it.
Right.
There's nothing for them to contribute to a conversation. And so they may like the photo. They may find it interesting. But I've definitely found that familiarity in travel is a big thing. And you'll also notice on most travel websites that the people leaving comments are other bloggers.
Very
and
true.
And so the rank and file normal person in the public is not going to be engaging in the same way that other bloggers do.
Yeah, very interesting. I didn't ever really think of that passive thing, but yeah, most of the time people are going to read your stuff, even if they enjoy it. It, you know, if they don't have anything to add to it, they're probably not going to comment. They're probably not going to tweet it out or something like that. But they are reading it and they are liking it. And I think that's a really important thing to know, that there is a quiet majority of people who like your stuff. So even if you are an aspiring blogger and you think, okay, no one's reading this and no one cares, if you build it slowly and you do a good job, I think that people will find you organically.
We've actually, in the last year, and I say we because I have an assistant who helps me, we've been actually trying to accelerate that. So we've organically got to about 30,000 fans on Facebook. And then we picked that up by actually beginning to do advertising on Facebook. And what we found is that when people hear my story, it's a pretty easy sell. They find it fascinating. How long I've been traveling, how many places I've visited. But we just need to get people exposed to the message. And so we've had a lot of success doing that. We've taken the fan page from 30,000 to 90,000 over the last year doing that.
Wow. Yeah, that's a big, big jump there. Yeah, and I think that most of the people who do have a good story to tell, people who want to be travel bloggers, if they have done the traveling, and I think that's a big difference between you and some other people who start up blogs, is that you are actually on the ground traveling, you know, basically day in and day out. And I think that people can tell if you're traveling and if you're not traveling, or if you're just writing about it because you've been there one time, which is also fine, but it's not really the experience that a lot of people want to read about. They want to read about someone like you who's doing it over and over again. And I think that if you are doing that and people do hear your story, they will follow you eventually.
If you look at who the most successful travel blogs are, for the most part, it has become people who do travel extensively. And I think that for people that those, you know, people that have a following, it's because unless you are doing that, there isn't much to be invested in. And I should also point out, we're talking about, you know, what do new bloggers, advice for them. I had a huge advantage in that I was doing this relatively early. There were only a few right. travel websites or travel blogs at the time. But now, if you start a blog, there's a whole lot of them out there. There are thousands. And the one thing I didn't have to compete against was guys like me.
Right.
They didn't exist. Whereas if you started now, you're doing it in an environment where people like myself exist, and that makes it a little bit more difficult.
Yeah, I completely agree that, you know, you put your time in a long time ago before a lot of people even knew kind of what a blog was. And that's obviously paid dividends here in 2013. One of the interesting things that I think you do with your blog as well, like I said, with the daily photo, I think it's very consistent. I think that obviously helps build your audience, is having that consistency. And another thing that I think is interesting is the idea of sponsored trips and having a sponsor. I think you're one of the first kind of people to branch out into that arena, correct?
I was certainly one of the first. That's actually something when I made the decision to kind of make this into a business, I realized that travel and tourism is a very large industry. And so it was probably a opportunity for making money that was not possible in other niches, which is why you don't hear the marketing bloggers talk about it. There's no opportunity for them, so it's not on their radar at all. Whereas worldwide, travel and tourism is a $12 trillion business. It dwarfs almost every other industry in the world, but they don't know that, so they don't talk about it.
Yeah, so there's a market there for, you know, for people to promote travel products, and obviously if they can put your face with it or you can recommend it because you've used it and liked it, there's the opportunity there to have, you know, a sponsorship like you do with a few of your sponsors.
Right.
Yeah, Gary, it's been absolutely wonderful having you on the show. You're someone that I've been reading for years now, so it's been extra special for me to get to pick your brain. But before I let you go, tell people where they can find you online, how they can follow you.
You can find me at everything-everywhere.com, and you can find links to all the various social media outlets I post at from there.
And since I know you're always working on some new stuff, what projects have you recently finished, or do you have anything in the pipeline at the moment that people should be looking out for?
The big thing is we launched a community site, a forum, for all my readers to share travel tips and stories amongst themselves. Just go to my website and click on the forum link, and that'll take you there.
And I do know that this has been an ongoing process, but do you have any plans for the book, or is that just a thing that's kind of an abstract idea in the future?
You know, I have had a literary agent for 3 years now. He's a great guy. He's repped a lot of best-selling books, including Tim Ferriss, and I just haven't had time to write it. So hopefully I'll be able to do that sometime this year.
All right, and we'll definitely be looking out for that. Listeners, if you have a question for Gary that we haven't answered here in the podcast, leave a comment over on the post at extrapackofpants.com. I'll make sure Gary gets them. And Gary, once again, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
If you like the podcast, don't forget to subscribe to it on iTunes. And if you're really feeling generous, go ahead and give it a rating. And remember, if you want to make your travel dreams a reality, visit extrapackofpeanuts.com, the web's number one place for frequent flyer knowledge and cheap travel tricks. Thanks for joining us, everyone. And until next time, happy free travels. Yeah, well, you don't have to worry.